Kings of Macedonia, Alexander the Great. Alexander reorganizes his army and government, part one. The rest anticipated with such eagerness by most of the army proved elusive, and as one war seemed to end, another seemed to begin. Alexander was to fight just one more major battle and never again attack a city as large or as formidable as the man-made defenses of Tyre or Gaza, where the sieges last for months. Even so, he spent most of the remainder of his life on campaign and fought many, many times in small skirmishes, engagements involving thousands, and especially besieging and assaulting scores of mud-walled settlements. As a share of time, most of the rest of his life was occupied with marching and riding, mile after mile, day after day, sleeping in tents in modest huts and villages, or occasionally in a grander house of the biggest settlements. As well as hard travel, combat was common experience, whatever its scale, and he kept on fighting and winning, at the price of adding to his long catalogue of wounds. These later years of Alexander's career often lack the clear drama and simple narrative of the grand confrontations with Darius, for more often than not, the army split into several columns that then operated independently, not to mention the numerous detachments and garrisons left behind to control the conquered territory. In itself, this was nothing new, for Philip and Alexander had both split and recombined the army depending on the strategic situation of the time, and big battles were always rare things. What had changed was the scale, for Alexander had substantially more troops under arms than his father had ever mustered, while the distances were far greater, as were the extremes of terrain and climate. Reforms in the structure of the army reflect the smaller scale of operations, although in some cases details and timing are unclear. After Gaugamela, companion cavalry was divided into two permanent subunits with a theoretical strength of about 100 men, and a little later the Hypaspes may similarly have reorganized to add an additional level of command. In each case, this may have been formal recognition of the existing common practice. Within a year, the companions also operated as hipparchies. Each of the two illae, and in due course, eight hipparchies were formed, perhaps with a substantial increase in overall numbers of these horsemen, unless each unit was now made smaller. There may have been changes in the equipment for some contingents, and a unit of light horse armed with spears or javelins appears around this time. Some scholars believe the latter to be locally recruited cavalry, but since the Seriphori light cavalry vanished at the same time, more likely they had gained a new name and perhaps shorter weapons than the long lances they used in the past. Lycian troops arrived in substantial numbers in 330 BCE, along with more mercenaries, and over the next few years, contingents of cavalry raised in central and eastern satrapies appeared in ever-growing numbers. Such men tended to be superb horsemen, their fighting style well suited to the country and the warfare of the region, which made them an important asset as well as merely additional manpower. Equally, as with mercenaries from Greece and elsewhere, it was far better to keep restless and warlike men employed as part of Alexander's army rather than letting them wander about taking service against him. As far as we can tell, such soldiers served in separate units, and apart from an additional royal escort of guard formed from Persian nobles, none were given much prominence or status. From 334 BCE, Philotas had led all the companion cavalry, but following his execution in 330 BCE, Alexander decided not to entrust this responsibility to a single replacement, and instead split the command between Hephaestion and Cletus the Black. The latter was an experienced soldier who had served in many of Philip's campaigns, more recently leading the royal squadron and saving Alexander's life at the Granicus, and the appointment can have raised few eyebrows. In contrast, Hephaestion does not appear ever to have led a unit in action, making his promotion a blatant act of faith and favoritism on Alexander's part towards his old friend, whose aggressive loyalty had so recently been proven in the condemnation of Philotas. The Macedonian army was the state under arms, and like the government in general, had no fixed hierarchy or system of promotion, so was shaped by the king's choices, which in turn reflected the influence of individuals and families among the aristocracy. While Philotas had experienced leading cavalry from being appointed to overall command of the companion cavalry, he was still very young for such an important post, and his selection then reflected his father's importance as much as his own record and talent. Arrian attributes a joint command of the elite cavalry as primarily a matter of trust. It is not clear whether the hipparchies were introduced, so this reorganization may have occurred at the same time or possibly later. Although Alexander split command of the companion cavalry, he kept the hypaspis under a single commander, so fears about entrusting so much responsibility for troops closest to him was not his only concern, and reform may have reflected the way cavalry squadrons were being used. Whatever its political or practical advantages, any increase in the number of officers also meant the creation of new permanent posts, all with pay and prestige associated with rank. Alexander is supposed primarily to have taken into account men's service records as he filled these new commands, although no doubt other factors such as family and connections also played a role. The new officers owed their elevation to him and were visible proof that courage and loyalty to the king would be rewarded. And so we'll continue with that next time before setting off and heading east. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arrian's The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.